Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We are so excited to have you here. We are, as usual, doing all the things all at the same time. So, Marty, I'm super glad you could get here, and I'm super glad I could get here, and we're doing good.
Yep. Some days that's all you hope for.
That's right. Get
just to get here.
Yeah. Well, I missed a thing anyway. It's a whole nother story. But yeah, hey. So today we managed to both be in the same place at the same time, virtually at least. And soon we're going to be in the same place at the same time for reals, reals. So we're pretty excited for that day.
Just a few days.
But meantime, today we're talking about blastomycosis, which is a fungal infection. Am I right?
That's correct. It is a fungal infection.
So blastomycosis, is it just like Wisconsin, the northern Midwest, or it's nationwide, or, and I know there's other fungal infections. So let's kind of go down the road of ickiness here.
Sure. So blasto tends to be the upper Midwest. It's frequently found in areas where wood chipping has taken place. So places that trees have been cut down or chipped, or garden centers and, you know, things along those lines. There are other parts of the country that have other kinds of fungal infections. Mm-hmm. So it's not like if you don't live in Wisconsin that you're safe from it. So Wisconsin, right. Minnesota, those areas, we see a lot of it. Mm-hmm. If you go to the Southwest, like Arizona, then you see coccidiomycosis, which is also fungal. And then if you go to the Mississippi Valley, you find histoplasmosis. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely regional differences. They're all nasty, wicked, bad diseases. And people think of fungus and yeast as being the same thing, and they're not. Okay. It is systemic. It is a bad, bad, bad disease. The commonality between histo and blasto and coccidiomycosis is that it causes fungal pneumonia, and then there's other organs that are involved differently in different of those diseases. But the common thread that runs through that is coccidio, blasto, and histio all have fungal pneumonia. So the dogs will come in sometimes with respiratory signs, sometimes with other signs, sometimes with both. Anytime we have a dog that comes in with respiratory disease and we take a chest x-ray, I get a lot of comments back from all of our radiologists that we work with, you need to test this dog for blasto. So it is common. It is becoming more common.
So your dog is coughing, it's gagging and wheezing, and you take it in to be examined by the vet for this. You can see it on a chest x-ray. You're not diagnosing this with like blood tests or whatever.
Well, the bottom line test is a urine test, but the suspicion is typically on a chest x-ray. So the dog may be wheezing or coughing. The dog may have shortness of breath and not really have a cough. They can have a variety of respiratory signs. There's usually not any nasal discharge. If they have a nasal discharge, that'll be something like aspergillosis, which is a fungal infection up in the nasal passages, different than this. So there's all kinds of wicked things. And dogs stick their noses into places that they shouldn't. So they inhale the spores, whether it's coccidio or histo or blasto, they inhale the spores, and then they get these fungal pneumonias. So some of these dogs will have virtually no signs of respiratory disease, and some will be pretty dramatic. On the chest x-ray, if it's really full-blown blasto or one of the others, it looks like somebody took a handful of cotton balls and threw it at the screen. It's just these white, big patches, and it can be the entire lung field that's covered in these lesions. And so when you see the x-ray, it's a small wonder that these dogs are having respiratory problems. But they don't always present as a respiratory case. My first really memorable case of blasto came in as a prostate and a type of presentation.
Oh, wow.
And I have now seen 4 cases of blastoprostatitis in intact male dogs, maybe 5. But we see presentations that are different. I've seen them come in with just swollen hocks, swollen foot, draining skin wound on the foot. Those are not uncommon. Sometimes they present with eye problems because the retina is disrupted by the fungal infection and they can go blind. So you can see that. So it may not be that this dog comes in with respiratory signs. And we've had a few of them that they'll sneak up on us. They'll come in with something and we'll put them on a steroid, not realizing that they have blasto. And of course, a steroid will suppress the immune system. And then it allows blasto just to blow up. It's affectionately called the blossom test because it goes from being under control, the immune system sort of manages it until you suppress it with the steroids, and then it blows up. So blasto we most typically see in young adult dogs, often male, but not exclusively, but typically 2 to 4 years age, sometimes 1 to 4 years of age, typically a young male dog, whether it's coccidioblasto, histio, mm-hmm. it typically is that young patient that their immune system isn't quite there yet. They're not baby babies, but their immune system isn't quite there yet. It's frequently seen in Arizona. We used to live there when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And a real frequent presentation in Arizona in the dogs is lameness. They come in with a limping. It can be on any of the legs, but it's almost always, again, that young adult dog. But we moved there when my parents were adults, young adults, and my dad got it because, again, he came into the community, into that area without any previous exposure. And so his immune system didn't know how to deal with it. So once he was exposed, it actually affected him. So I have some personal experience.
We're talking about a zoonotic disease here. This is attacks people and pets.
But it doesn't spread from a pet to a person or a person to a pet. It's spread through the common source, which is the soil. And like I said, in Wisconsin, typically it's soil that's been disrupted. There was a case in Wisconsin a number of years ago where 120 people got blasto at one event because they were at a garden center on a Saturday morning. And across the river from the garden center was an area that had been forested. They cut down the trees there was all this stuff. And then the wind was just the right direction that particular day that all the people at the garden center were exposed to the spores blowing through the air. Frequently in dogs, it's because they stick their nose down into the dirt where you've disrupted it. You've dug the garden or you've put in a new fence or, you know, something that disrupts the soil. And then the dog will get it. Tree cutters in Wisconsin are at increased risk, again, because of the kind of environment that they're in. I had a client that had two sons that both had blasto, human sons. So you can see that kind of a typical pattern is it's from the exposure to the spore. You inhale the spore, it ends up in your lungs, you get pneumonia, and then it spreads to other organs. So it's not spread dog to dog. It's not spread dog to human. It's spread through the common source of the soil being disrupted with that kind of pH and that kind of environment that the spores can live in.
Wow. And how do you avoid it? Like how, you know,
wear
like
a mask.
You can avoid some things, right? You cannot cook your dog in a hot car. Like, how do you avoid coming in contact? Like, is this something where, you know, you put bark chips in your flower bed? Is it that gonna, you know, talk to me about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that can put you at risk.
Just like scary as heck.
It is because it's really insidious. And then all of a sudden you go from not having it to having it. And I actually had a client who said that they'd had two dogs with it. And I said, I would sell my property and move. I would just not stay where the dogs had
burn
gotten
it. All
it.
Down.
Not just, not just for the dog's sake, but for your sake as well, because it is exposure, you know, the same stuff the dogs are exposed to. You are, if you're out gardening or planting or fencing or planting a tree or, you know, whatever it happens to be that disrupts the soil, gardening, any of those things. So those are the things to be aware of is you just need to think about that. And I suppose if you really are concerned, maybe your immune system isn't great, you maybe would wear a mask or pay someone to do your garden tilling or get to put in your fence or, you know, some of those things. Just you have to kind of think about it. If you don't have a great immune system, you're on some of the drugs that are immunosuppressive. And there's a multitude of those now on the market for so many different things that every time you turn around, you watch a commercial on TV and you're like, oh, you know, there's another drug or another indication for a drug. I've actually started trying to make a list of them so that I can better understand it because there's just so much. I don't have an immune mediated disease, but I think it's interesting to see the drugs coming to market and what they do. And so it's not just steroids or chemotherapy anymore. It's Humira. It's, you know,
there's
all these
things.
There's
a lot of us that have autoimmune mediated diseases, myself included.
Yeah, Skyrizi, and so people
all
with
the stuff,
you know, psoriarthritis and Crohn's disease and IBD and all this stuff, you're immunosuppressed on those drugs. So you want to be really especially thoughtful about that. And of course, our dogs may be immunosuppressed as well if they're on medications for allergies or other things. So those are things to be aware of. Just be thoughtful. And of course, putting your dog in a mask to go out into the garden is really difficult.
Probably not going to work.
Well, I've seen it, but it doesn't work well. So you may have to just come to terms with the fact that you have to be really careful. So those are things to be aware of. In Arizona, like I said, they come in limping every week. When I was at a small practice, a two-doctor practice in Phoenix, and every week there'd be a dog that came in limping. We'd take an x-ray, and it would look like there was a punched-out hole in the x-ray. It's a very characteristic looking x-ray. And then of course the pneumonia on the chest x-ray. So we would x-ray the chest if they came in limping, looking for fungal pneumonia. In dogs that come in with a draining skin lesion or anything that doesn't seem quite right, then yes, you definitely want to be taking chest x-rays. I haven't seen as much histio. I just saw one case of that when I was in vet school, and that causes GI disease, really chronic diarrhea and some pretty significant GI disease. But blasto, I have seen four or five cases, and I actually did a clinical report at the Theriogenology Conference a couple of years ago about blastoprostatitis, because literally when you read the literature, it says blastoprostatitis may occur, and that's it. So it's not real helpful, but the first case of it that I diagnosed was a seven-year-old intact male German short hair pointer. He came in. I said, oh, his prostate is enlarged. Let's neuter him. We neutered him. He came a week later into the practice with really significant respiratory distress. I took a chest x-ray. I'm like, oh, shnikes, this looks terrible. And in the meantime, I had cultured the urine on the dog to send to the diagnostic lab. And in the same week that he came back in not breathing well, I got a report from the lab and said, they said to me very unhappily, you sent us a case of urine to culture and it's blasto. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I was unaware of it. And that was back before we had a good test. We used to do these really ridiculous blood tests, and they weren't very helpful and weren't really useful. But the good news, if there's any good news about blasto, the good news is Mira Vista Labs has a very specific diagnostic test. You collect a urine sample. And the first time I saw, we sent a urine sample out to the diagnostic lab to test for blasto. I went, what? Urine? What are you talking about? So there's a urine test, Mira Vista Labs in Indiana. Now, I don't know how a Mira Vista ends up in Indiana, because that seems California or Arizona
seems
to me.
Seems a little bizarre, but okay.
Whatever. They do human testing and veterinary testing. And so you send the urine sample in, and typically within about 48 hours of the time that the sample gets to the lab, they have a diagnosis for you and they can quantify it. So it's not just, yes, it's blasto or no, it's not blasto. They can give you quantification that you have a number to work with. And the great thing about the number is that then you can monitor the number to see what you've got for a response to therapy. So the dogs will go on fluconazole, itraconazole, depending on where the lesions are. There's different drug choices. If it's in the eye, it's different than if it's in the prostate. If it's in the prostate, it's different than if it's in the skin or other soft tissues. So it'll tell you that the number is coming down. So the dog is responding to treatment. And there is one of those two drugs that can also be tested to make sure that the drug levels are high enough. Because again, not all drugs are metabolized the same way, and some can be compounded and some cannot be compounded effectively. And so if you're talking to your veterinarian about itraconazole or fluconazole, and it's a decision making of, well, the dog's not responding well to therapy, you need to know that you could do those additional tests to see, are you on the right drug? Is there a better choice? And typically, if I diagnose a case of blasto, and we actually just did this about 2 weeks ago at the practice, I send them straight to an ophthalmologist, like as fast as I can get them there.
Really?
Because they can so frequently have ocular lesions that if you don't address it with anti-inflammatory and the right protocol in the eye, you can lose vision. So as soon as we make a diagnosis on the urine test, I'm like, you're out the door to see the ophthalmologist, people, because I want your dog to still be able to see.
Wow. Okay.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
So assuming that you actually get a good diagnosis, like I assume most veterinarians in the areas that these things are an issue, look for them across the board.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fairly typical looking x-ray. Sometimes, though, it's not. I mean,
but
sometimes
I'm saying,
it'll just be
if
the
my
lymph
dog
nodes.
comes in limping, is my vet necessarily going to do a chest x-ray?
It depends on where you live. If you live in Oregon, probably not. If you live in Arizona, I would think so. If you live in Massachusetts, probably not. If you live in Wisconsin, probably. So there are definitely differences regionally. And
Okay.
so the second dog that I saw with blastoprostatitis, I was walking through the clinic. One of my associate doctors had the dog under anesthesia, and I walked past. They had the dog anesthetized, and I walked past, and there was this sore on the dog's foot. And I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I'm going to neuter him. He's got a prostate problem." And I said, "He's got blasto." And she goes, "No, he doesn't." Yeah, he did. So it doesn't take you too long to figure out that that's the case. And I saw a Boykin Spaniel. So the Boykin came in already diagnosed with blasto. It was in one of his testicles. It was in his prostate. He was already blind and he belonged to an elderly physician. And we removed one of the dog's testicles, left him intact with one testicle. The dog was blind, but the dog still hunted and the dog still bred. So he was very happy because the two things that were important to him in his life were breeding and hunting. And so he could still do that because he had one testicle and no vision. And then the last one I saw,
you can't see
he was doing all nose work stuff. It was a little Boykin, so he did fine. And then the last one I saw was a curly coat, and he came into us at 3 years of age with a prostate problem. And I looked at him and I said, "You're not old enough to have benign prostatic hypertrophy. You're a puppy. You're young. You're three." So he didn't have a very big prostate and he didn't have anything on his chest x-ray. But I said, "We're checking you for blasto." And yep, sure enough, he had it. Wow. So you start to see these patterns evolve. And so if your veterinarian says, "We'd like a chest x-ray, we'd like to do a urine sample," shake your head up and down and say, "Yes, please."
That sounds great.
Yeah, because the sooner you diagnose it, the better chance you have. I've seen bitches with pregnancies that are immunosuppressed because of the pregnancy. I've seen them die during pregnancy. So, I mean, bad stuff happens. So
that's
if
what
your
I was
vet
just,
says.
I was just going to ask, what's the prognosis? Like if I come in and my dog's kind of coughing and he's a little bit lame, I mean, is my dog going to live? I mean, is this a thing?
Usually they live. Back in the old days, we used to have to use amphotericin B, which was an IV antifungal, and it was nasty. The dogs would get really sick. It was very expensive. It was very painful for the dogs to go through. We don't have to do that anymore. The medications now, like I said, are either itraconazole or fluconazole, depending on which tissues are involved. And typically those dogs do pretty well, but it is a very, very, very long treatment. It is usually 6 to 12 months plus for treatment.
What?
And the drugs are not inexpensive. So if you have a Bernese Mountain Dog with blasto, you need to like go to the bank and ask for a loan because it's going to be expensive.
Or hope that you have health insurance for your pet.
Yes. Or just get health insurance for your pet. Like just do it. Just do it now.
We
so
strongly
that
encourage
happen,
it here at the Marty and Laura Show and Pure Dog Talk. We're just saying.
Because you don't want to be the person that has to say, "How much is this going to be? And I don't think I can afford it." You want to look at your insurance card and say, I paid my premium and I'm good to go. So those are the things that you need to know. And like I said, this is a young dog disease. This is typically between 2 and 4 years of age. So it's not the age category that you typically think about insurance for.
Right.
Because, you know, it's not the cancer age. It's not the arthritis age. Right. It's not the age of a lot of these things. So absolutely, you need to be prepared for this, especially if you live in a hotbed for some of these diseases. And if your neighbor dog has blasto and your friend's dog has blasto, go get insurance, folks. Like, just go do it.
The best way to get insurance, just here's a pro tip from the pro. Best way to get pet insurance is to insure your 8-week-old puppy when it leaves the breeder or immediately thereafter, because that will give you the best potential for low rates for the life of the dog. But that's
low
just
rates.
What I know.
And there's nothing pre-existing. When you're 8 weeks old, there's very little pre-existing.
Exactly.
So just get them signed up,
just do
pay
it.
Your premium. And you think you're going to say, "Oh, well, I'll just put that money aside into a checking account. And then if I run into a problem, I've got it saved." Yeah, no one does that.
You know, maybe our friend Katie Campbell might do that, but nobody I know does.
She's in the room with me and she's saying yes.
Yes, I know. I've had lots of really good intentions of doing that, but, you know, paying my insurance premium works just as well. So there you go. Okay. So, blasto, cats. Are cats a thing with blasto?
I've never
seen any of these other fungal infections.
No. I mean, I guess they technically could, because technically cats can even get things like leptospirosis, but it's very rare. And cats don't do stupid things like dogs do, like go stick their nose in the dirt and snuffle around to look for the bone that they buried the previous week, because they think they put it under this tree, but it's really under that tree. So typically cats are not going to be exposed to that. They do get aspergillosis and they do get other fungal infections in their respiratory tract, but not typically in the lungs. So probably not a reason to go out and insure your cat. There's other reasons to insure your cat.
Right.
That would not be one of them.
That's not it. Okay. And what are some of the other, like valley fever, you know, sort of like show up with random, weird. We've talked a little bit on this podcast about Lyme disease, but there's a variety of things out there in the world that can affect our pets that have just really strange or random or nonsensical seeming symptoms. So,
well, valley fever is coccidiomycosis.
Okay. That is what
that is. That is one and the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's seen in the Arizona Valley. You know, like I said, I used to live there. I lived there for 4 years. And so I have some familiarity with it. And then when I was a vet student, I went back. So yes, that is typically what valley fever is considered. And you can see it in Arizona, New Mexico, that really dry, arid climate. And it's hard to understand how the spores can get there and survive, but they're hardy little buggers.
Permafrost in Wisconsin. So there you go. And I think about things like, you know, there's dogs that go look for truffles, right? Like that would seem like a place where you would see that, but we don't hear about it here on the West Coast.
Yeah. And truffles, oh, truffles. If you've never had a real truffle, oh, you know, you can only have them fresh. There's no such thing as preserved truffles. And there's no such thing as having winter and summer truffles at the same time, because they don't preserve. They lose 10% of their flavor a day after harvesting. If I wax poetic about truffles, it's because we went truffle hunting when we were in France a couple of years ago, and I'm mad about truffles. So it does seem like that would put them at risk, because they're sticking their nose into the dirt where there are spores of little creatures that are supposed to grow mushrooms. So yeah, we actually just went to a morel dinner 2 weeks ago.
Ooh,
and
fun.
You know, in Wisconsin, morel season is like 20 minutes long.
Oh yeah. Whereas in Oregon, morel season is like,
it's 5 months. Yeah. It's 5 months long. And I actually have a few clients that bring me morels because they know how much I adore having them. But where you live, you would think that that would put you at risk of things like blasto, but it's the soil acidity. It's the content of the, it's stuff about the microclimates that happen that allow truffles or morels to grow, but they don't seem to, I don't know. It's hard to understand, isn't it?
I was waiting for like a Mardi Gras, you know, they save the seeds under the Arctic sort of mind blowing answer to this question. I'm a little bit sad here.
I'm sorry. The best I have for you is valley fever is coccidiomycosis.
Okay. That is good. I was thinking they probably were the same, but I had not heard the two. Got it.
Yeah. They are. And so they, like I said, they're not spread animal to animal. They're spread through the spores. They're not spread dog to human, human to dog. Yeah. But don't culture it in the lab, because you can get it from a culture plate. So those spores will grow in the laboratory setting and you can inhale the spores. So that's why the diagnostic lab was a little bit out of shape when I sent them a sample and didn't know it was blasto. But I wouldn't have known, because the dog, like how often have you heard about a dog with prostatitis that had blasto causing the prostatitis? It's pretty rare. So it happens, but it's not common. So anyway, anytime you see a draining lesion on the skin, anytime you see a limping dog, anytime you see respiratory, like I said before, if your vet says we want to take a chest x-ray, say yes. And if your vet's chest x-ray person says, like the radiologist says, you should be testing the urine, then shake your head and say, yes, let's do that. Because early diagnosis is absolutely key in getting these dogs turned around and getting them to survive, because they get really sick really fast. And even today, many people still end up losing their dogs either because the disease is fulminant or because of the cost. So the sooner you get a handle on it and the sooner you can get a treatment started, the better the chances are that your dog has a good outcome. And it happens in all breeds. There is not a breed specificity. I've seen it in female Bernese Mountain Dogs. I've seen it in male German Shorthairs. I mean, you can have it in any breed, but it typically is that 1 to 4 or 2 to 4 year old dog. I've seen it once in a giant schnauzer that was under a year of age, but typically it's that 2 to 4 year old adult dog, male or female, that has, you know, a life of being outside and running around and being in the dirt.
Running around being a wild thing.
Yeah. Well, that's what dogs should be able to do.
Well, and I think it's interesting that you don't see it so much in puppies, Because in my breed, the puppies are the ones that are always sticking their nose in things they shouldn't be sticking their noses in.
And so that's the good question is, does their immune system protect them to a certain point, or does it require a certain amount of time? Like, how long from exposure to disease do we actually see? And I don't think we actually have a good handle on that.
Really? That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
The world's full of interesting things.
It is true. And if you didn't know it, folks, you come to the Marty and Laura show and you find it out.
Right. Because we're just going to keep you on your toes.
We're just going to fill you full of interesting things to know. All right. Well, Marty,
for sure.
I appreciate you taking some time. We look forward to having you here, actually physically on set, as they say. Can't believe we get to say that. That's so cool.
I know. I can't wait. I'm very excited to be able to see your world.
I'm excited
coming early so I can
visit the world. Excellent. All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Always, if you have questions, if you have a topic, if you want to know something that Marty and I can help you with, then by golly, just drop us an email.
Yep, because we are very willing to please, just like Labradors.
Well, I'm a little bit more like a wire hair, but you know.
Okay.
There's also the Marty and Laura Show Facebook page. You can check that out. There's a website. Yes. There's all kinds of places that you can find us and send us smoke signals. So we look forward to hearing from you. And Marty, you just have yourself a wee old time back there on the East Coast.
Yeah, we can even find us in the ladies' room.
It could happen. It's been known to happen. All right. Peace Bye. Out, yo.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.